in lesson two of our study on the truth about giving. And just as far as an update goes, Ray started the class doing the introductory stuff and was going to do lesson one, but he still is not feeling very well. He's got bronchitis, actually. And Betty's not feeling very well either, so that's why they're not here today. We're still going to, whenever he does feel better and is able to be back, he's going to go back and cover that chapter one. But until then, we're going to continue on. And so this week, we're going to finish lesson two. And Jerry, I think you've got lesson three, don't you?
I do.
So you're going to do that next week, right? So that's what our plan is right now, anyway. So what we're talking about in this particular part of our study, we began last week talking about how money makes a miserable master. And we were discussing the whole idea of, you know, just kind of what comes to mind when we think about masters and being slaves and those kinds of things. There are a lot of positive images that come with that. When we consider God being our master and us being his slaves, there are a lot of negative images that come to mind when we think about man being masters and being slaves and so forth. So as we look at this particular part, we talked about, first of all, money being a deceitful master. Okay? That money makes all kinds of promises, doesn't it? And it's very deceitful in the promises that it makes for us. What are some of the ways that money can be a deceitful master? Did anybody recall some of those we talked about last week? Okay, yeah, it tells you lies. It says if you have more of me, you'll be happy, right? Okay, just get more money and everything will be fine. What else? What other ways is money a deceitful master? Okay? Yeah. You're never going to be satisfied. No matter how much you get, you always want more. Okay? Okay. All right. Okay. Certainly it changes our attitude, doesn't it? About, you know, how who we are in comparison to other people and so forth. Okay? Any others? Okay. All right. Sometimes, you know, we get a lot of money, you get lots of friends all of a sudden, don't you? And all of a sudden, all kinds of family members you never even knew existed start coming out of the woodwork, you know, and so forth.
Sometimes, when you want to get more money, you can go into God or your family.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Whatever you have to do or go, live or whatever,
to
make that more money.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. And that's one of the big things is that money gives you a sense of false security. And one of the things that we mentioned last time is that the idea that there are a lot of people who are slaves to money and they don't even know it. You know, that when we look at, you know, okay, we think we're in control, and that's the deceitfulness. We think we're in control of our money, but in actuality, it's the money that gets in control of us. All right? One of the things that we mentioned last week also about this is that you don't have to be a person who has a lot of money in order to have money being your master. Okay? You can be someone who doesn't have hardly any money at all. And still, money can be your master if that's the focus and the drive of your life, is always seeking to get some money so I won't be without it, you see. So we talked about the idea that you know, problems with money aren't just for rich people. They're also for poor people. We talk about, you know, who is it that is always out buying lottery tickets all the time? It's usually not the wealthy that are doing that. It's the poor people that are doing that because they have this desire to do what?
get rich. Okay, I want money. Well, you just win the lottery, then all these things we've been talking about would come true for me. I'd be secure and happy and content and all of those things. You know, so it's not just a problem. Money is not just a problem for those who have it and have a lot of it. Okay? Money is deceitful in that it can cause problems for all of us. The second thing we were talking about, this is where we left off last time. We were talking about money wants to rule our lives, okay? We looked at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, where Jesus says that no one can serve two masters. Remember us talking about the words that he uses there, okay? That he says either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Okay, so if money is ruling in your life, then what does that mean? What did we say last week? If money is the focus of your attention, then that means that you, what? According to what Jesus is saying here, you love and are devoted to money, okay? But then it also means that you what? You hate and despise God. Okay, there's no other choice there, okay? It's one or the other. Jesus said, you can't have it both ways. Okay? You're either going to love one and hate the other, you're going to be devoted to one and despise the other. Okay? Matthew 6 and verse 24. Okay? So, keeping that in mind, okay, we were talking then about what does a person's life look like when he or she is a slave to money. Okay? What does slavery to money look like in a person's life? What's it look like? Okay? Money is a hard, hard master to work for, because it demands all of our time and all of our energy. See? So that's why you have people that are working all the time in order to get more money, because that master requires it. Okay, so their life is consumed with work, or other things that will cause them or allow them to get more money. Right? What other kinds of things do we kind of see in terms of what it looks like when a person is a slave to money? Okay. Yeah. We had we haven't been there in a long time, but, you know, when we were down in South Carolina, it seemed like, you know, we had an epidemic of that, because they have all these little gambling casinos just are all over the place, and there's these rules about, you know, you can go in and you can only have X number of machines in a room, and so you have these buildings they set up, and they've got all these rooms in them, you see, but there's only like however many machines they can have in a room, and each one is a separate gambling parlor or whatever, and there were a lot of times, a lot of cases where parents would leave their young child in the car, and several of them died while their parent is in there gambling. And he said, they sit in these machines and, you know, and are playing these machines to make money, and your child got in the car, you know, dying because they're in a locked up car in the heat. It's pretty hot down there in South Carolina. That happened a lot. I imagine it's probably still happening. But, you know, yeah, those kinds of things. What else? Yeah, it can lead to all kinds of sin, can't you? You know? Okay. Which brings us then to the next part of this. And I think I mentioned this text to you last week. I want to get you to turn there and let's take a look at this, what Paul says to Timothy. 1 Timothy 6, verses 9 and 10. Okay?
And look at what he says here. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Now look at what he says here. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. All right? So let's take a look at what is he talking about here. Somebody just mentioned, people are willing to go out and commit murder in order to get money. That's how bad of a master and a mean a master can be. That would have us to fall into that kind of temptation where we're willing to take somebody else's life so that we can get money. Okay? Think about it this way. When he says, some people eager for money have wandered from the faith. Who's he talking about? Christians. Okay? Alright? They can't wander from the faith if they're not in it. So he's talking primarily here, people who are believers, and they've wandered from the faith because of their eagerness to get money. And then he says they have pierced themselves with many griefs. One of the visuals that the author talks about in this book is that you take a large needle or a knife and just start jabbing yourself with it. How painful would that be? But yet that's the image that we need to have in our mind of what he's saying here. When you pierce yourself with many griefs, it's kind of like that. And you could just be taking something and just stabbing yourself repeatedly over. Okay? And yet we would say, no way I would do anything like that.
That's the
allure
of getting rich quick scheme.
Okay. Yeah.
Real quick.
Right. And who's it going to hurt? And oftentimes we think that way, though, don't we? It's not going to hurt anybody. People take, all kinds of money that could be going to food and utility bills and, sustaining their lives and so forth. And they go and they buy lottery tickets so they can get rich. Okay? And then they're not getting rich. They're not winning the lottery. So what happens? Are they not piercing themselves? Because now they don't have enough money to buy food or the other things that they need. See? Because they're spending it and trying to get rich. Okay? If money is in control, you may not realize it because of the deceitfulness of wealth. We talked about that earlier. Mentioned Jesus in Matthew 13:22 talks about the deceitfulness of wealth. Remember in the parable of the sower, we mentioned that last week. When he talks about that seed that fell on that thorny ground, what does he say? The deceitfulness of wealth. See? Comes up and chokes. Right? So wealth is deceitful. The going after money is deceitful. And money can deceive us into thinking as long as we give something to God, then we're okay. What's wrong with that idea? As long as I give something to the Lord.
That's what God asks.
Okay. Right? And, yeah, should be first fruits, right? Okay. So not only is it not just something, but what else is the problem with that? What? Well, it is already his, but if we're just willing to give him something rather than what he requires. Does God require us to give a certain amount to it? Do what now? Give with a cheerful heart.
But also there's a couple of other things that he says about it. Go back over to Malachi chapter 3. And when it came to the Israelites, what was their problem that Malachi talks about here? Through the prophet Malachi, God says that the Israelite people were doing what? They were robbing him. Okay? And then he says, and you say, how are we robbing you? And he says what? With tithes and offerings, right? And then he says, bring in what? The whole tithe. What is a tithe? It's 10%. It's a tenth. Okay? A tithe is a tenth. And that's what they were required to do. Now, that's the Israelites, okay? They were required to give a tenth. All right? And they weren't doing that. They weren't giving what God required of them to give. So therefore, God saw that as what? Robbery. Okay? God says, you're robbing. You're stealing from me. Ooh, isn't that just a frightening thought to think that we would steal from God? Especially when you consider, as Carla said a moment ago, who's it all belong to anyway? It belongs to him anyway. So we don't give him back what he's told us to give, then we aren't stealing from him, are we not? Okay, then we say, all right, well, but yeah, that's the Old Testament, right? We're not under the tithe today, right? We're not under the law of Moses. We're not required to tithe today, right? So what does he tell us to do? What are we required to give? Do what? Well, you know, I kind of always look at it, first of all, is the tithing should be a minimum. I mean, if that's what he required the Israelites under the old law, why shouldn't he require anything less of us today? All right. Thank you.
Don't you ever say God will prosper you? No, I have
1 Corinthians 16 and verse 2. Paul gives instructions about giving, does he not? On the first day of the week, each one is to what? Lay by in store or give as he has been prospered, or some translations say, in keeping with his income. So what does that mean? What does it mean in keeping with your income? Well, it's not specifically stated there, but again, I go back and I think it's very reasonable to look at the tithe, the 10%. That's what God required before, so why should I give any less than 10% to God today, you say, in keeping with my income? So if I give, 10% of my income back to God, at least 10%, okay, then I don't think there's a problem with God looking at that and saying, yeah, that's your giving in keeping with your income. I want to give less than that. Well, is that acceptable to God? I'm not going to say it isn't, but you know what? I think we can be pretty sure that giving at least 10% would be acceptable to God, because that's what he required before. All right. The other part of that is, what did God tell the Israelites in Malachi? Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse and see what? Yeah, see if I won't pour open the floodgates of heaven and give you more blessing than you can hold. Okay, now, if we give according to our income, right? And and by the way, here's a little side thing. What's wrong with the idea where people start looking at it and going, okay, I need to give according to my income, but is that gross or is that net? Let me remember that. What's the problem there? See, I'm already trying to figure out what's the minimum, what's the least that I have to give to God. Yeah. Okay. Because as G pointed out a while ago, what does God want? A cheerful giver, right? All right. So if I'm trying to negotiate or I'm trying to figure out what's the least amount that I can get by with giving, if I'm, you know, then it doesn't sound very cheerful attitude to me. Okay. Now, so if I'm supposed to give according to my income, right, and you know, I get paid every week, and you know, I am content to give God something. So you know, the collection plate's getting ready to come around, and I, you know, look in my wallet or my purse and go, okay, I got a $5 bill in here, and I'll put that in the collection plate. What does that mean? Well, not only did you not prepare, but what does that mean in terms of what your income was that week?
Didn't get very much.
Yeah. How much did you get?
$50.
Yeah. If I'm only giving 10% and I gave $5, you know, I got $50 that week is what I'm saying. Folks, we spend more than that generally on lunch and dinner, eating out during the week, don't we? You say? And yet that's what we... You see, that's our oftentimes the attitude, that we're going to give God something, and as long as I give you something, then it's okay. But God requires us, according to this passage, to give back to Him in keeping with our income. Now, here's the other side of that whole thing. You know, especially when it comes to those, you know, who feel like, well, I could just get a little bit of money to pay my bills, and I just don't seem to have enough, and so forth. Talking about people that don't generally have enough and are always struggling trying to make ends meet. What if you were to give to God as He requires you to give? Remember what He said to the Israelites in Malachi again when He said He would pour out, open the floodgates? What did He say? Something very special that He said there. He said, test me in this and see if I won't open the floodgates. Okay? So, you see, if we were to test God by giving Him, say, at least a tenth of our income back to Him, and that would certainly be keeping within our income, would it not? Everybody agree with that? Okay. Then, you think God might help take care of some of those financial problems that we keep running into all the time because we don't give to Him? You see, that's what He promised. But this is not a, you know, send in your $5 and give, you know, this prayer card or whatever, and you'll get healthy, wealthy, and wise. That's not the point. Because God never promises us that He's going to make us healthy, wealthy, and wise, does He? If somebody can find a passage where He promises us that, then please let me know, because I haven't found it yet. But God does promise that He's going to do what? He's going to bless us, and He's going to take care of our needs. Thank you. Okay? But yet, oftentimes, our approach to giving is, let's see, I've got this bill, I've got that bill, I've got I got food, I got, you know, this, I got all these things I gotta pay, and I've only got this much money, so I gotta take care of all of these, and what I have left, I can give to God. Well, if you turn that around and you gave it to God when? First, we mentioned earlier, first fruits, right? You give to God first what He's required you to give. You think maybe you might, at the end of paying all your bills, have a little bit more? You say?
In my life, got into the church, and I'm not preaching anybody. I'm speaking from experience. Yeah. We have to be
you know, it's interesting to me, and I get an email from this company, you know, every couple of weeks they send me a new email, you know, trying to get us to take credit cards here at the church for our contributions. There's companies that do that, you know, they'll set you up, you know, so that people can actually use their credit card to make a contribution to the church. And I absolutely refuse to even go there. Okay? Because of that, a lot of people say, I need to give, but I don't have right now. I'll just put on a credit card and I can do it with that. That's the deceitfulness of money. Okay?
You know, to kind of piggyback on what Chuck was saying, is, you know, a lot of times we get ourselves in trouble worrying about what's going on with the fund. Because you look at popular people investing in $3 or $4. Mm-hmm. You know, getting money together to get a plane, and if you're in the congregation, you're worried about where the money going. You know, it's bad in both ways. I mean, you're supposed to let God take care of whatever loan's going on with the money, but then you're wrong for not holding back because you think he's getting ready to buy a brand new Bentley or airplane with the money you get. And you struggle trying to keep your lights on. That's wrong too.
There was an article that's been in the paper in the news for the last month or two. 103-year-old woman down in North Carolina got kicked out of her church. Okay? Either her father or her grandfather, I don't remember which, started that church. Now this woman's 103 years old, okay? And the preacher sent her a letter telling her she wasn't allowed to come back to the church. And it was mostly because she stopped giving. Okay? I just read a follow-up to that the other day. She got a lawyer, and she went back to the church. And some of the members in that church left along with the preacher. They went to go start another church. In other words, they kicked the preacher out. And she's now back there. But that kind of thing just shows you how, you know, we get our ideas just all messed up when it comes to giving and so forth. You know, for the preacher to say, you can't come back here because you're not giving. Just wrong. Period. There's just no way I can even think of that you can justify that kind of thing. You say, whether or not she's giving and what she's giving and all that kind of stuff really needs to be between her and God. Okay? But to say that you can't come back here because you're not giving.
Well, Russell, you just made another point here too, and I think we overlook this. We talk about giving, and we're supposed to give 10%, but it doesn't stop there. We also need to take care of our orphans and our widows.
Yeah.
That's part of giving too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're so focused sometimes, and I agree, we need to give by 10% and more, but we need to go beyond the monetary part too.
Well, we need to give of ourselves to the Lord first. Isn't that what Paul commended the Macedonian churches for? Of course, there's more of this kind of stuff we're going to be studying as we go through this whole study and everything. But all of those things, you know, we've got to be considering and realize how deceitful, you know, this money can be in terms of what it can get us focusing on. Okay, and how it can get us off and get us thinking in just some really bad ways. All right, and so let's we've got about 12 more minutes here left. Let's talk about the destructiveness of money. Okay, as the author here called the destructive dove. Think about it this way, and consider the destructive nature of the desire of wealth in people today. Okay, think about some different cases that have come up. Anybody remember a fellow by the name of Bernie Madoff? Mm-hmm. What was his problem? Yeah, money, greed, right? And he put together this Ponzi scheme and got all these investors to give him all this money, you say, And then, you know, everything kind of fell apart. The whole pyramid crumbled. And where's he? He's in prison right now. And what happened to all the people who gave him their money? Many of which, by the way, probably were greedy too, you know, wanting this get-rich-quick thing, you know, and so forth. What happened to them?
They lost it all.
They lost it all. Okay? And that's what oftentimes happens. There are various different reports and events of people who have killed themselves, taken their own lives, because of stock market crashes. Okay? And then one that I mentioned to you back earlier in the summer, a young man, 30 years old, not a young man, 30 years old, by the name of Thomas Gilbert Jr., who killed his father because his father wanted to reduce his monthly allowance by $200. Now, first of all, I got a problem with why is this 30-year-old man still collecting allowance, okay, from his dad? but that's another whole thing, all right? He's still collecting allowances. He's upset with his dad because his dad, you know, says, no, I'm going to have to cut back on your allowance. So he cut back $200 a month. And that's worth not just someone's life, but his father's life. How much is he getting a month now? No. Right now, he'd probably be really, really happy with just getting that $200 a month that his father wanted to cut him back, because I don't remember now what the report was, but he was getting several thousand dollars a month from his father. And he killed him for that $200 a month. And now he's getting nothing. He's in prison. Okay? And if he doesn't get the death penalty, which I understand is a possibility in his case, then he probably, most likely, will be in prison the rest of his life. So that greed and that seeking after money destroyed not only his life, but his father's life and the lives of other people that it affected. That's the destructiveness of money. But what about some biblical examples? Let's consider a few of those. Okay. First of all, there's a fella that we read about over in Joshua chapter 7, a fella by the name of Achan. In fact, his story, oftentimes in the Bible and headings and so forth, you read about Achan's sin. Okay, what was Achan's sin? Anybody recall? Yeah. When the Israelites were told by God to go in and conquer the city of Jericho, God gave them very specific instructions, right? And those instructions involved not taking anything, any spoils for themselves. They were to destroy how much?
Everything.
Okay? And was that raid successful? Yeah, they destroyed the city of Jericho and so forth. Then, after that, they went to the next city. City of Ai. And what happened? They lost the battle. Something is amiss here. Why did they lose? Well, we need to find out. Somebody had sinned. So they went through all the camp, you know, and trying to figure out. There was an elimination process that Moses used, and it all came down to Achan. And what had he done? Yeah, he kept back some of the spoils from Jericho and hid it in his tent, and when they found out, what happened to him? Yeah, he was killed. But not only him, but who else? His whole family was wiped out, okay? Alright? And not only that, in other words, you see the result of sin. It oftentimes doesn't just affect one person, okay? Because how do they find out about Achan's sin to begin with? Because they lost the battle. Well, do you suppose maybe some Israelite soldiers died in losing that battle? So they lost their lives. You see? And they lost the battle. Because Achan sinned. Okay? All because of the destructive nature of money. There's a man by the name of Gehazi. Right? Recall who he is or was? The servant of Elisha, 2 Kings. And this is from the story of Naaman. Remember, Naaman was a commander of the army of Aram, and he had leprosy. And he went to the prophet to be healed, and when he came to the prophet, he brought all kinds of riches with him. Garments of clothing and all just all kinds of stuff as an offering to pay for his healing. And Elisha told him to keep his stuff. Why would Elisha do that? Yeah. Well, you didn't want to be seen. You can go and buy the favors of God with money. And this wasn't done because you bought money. It was done because of God's goodness. Keep in mind that Naaman was a Gentile. And Elisha just basically told him, said, go down to the River Jordan and dip yourself seven times in the river and you'll be clean. And Elisha, his initial response was what? Not Elisha, but Naaman. What was his initial response? He didn't want to. He got angry about it. You know, the rivers of Syria are a whole lot better than this dirty old Jordan River. Why should I go and dip in that? And Naaman's servant came and told him, he said, look, if he would have told you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? How much more to do something simple like this? And so he did, he was healed. And then he left. And Gehazi, after Elisha went back in the house and Naaman's on his way, he ran after Naaman. Said, excuse me, sir. About all that stuff you brought with you, I've got some folks that need some articles of clothing and, you know, named off some things. So he basically went and got some wealth from Naaman, brought it back. And Elisha confronted him. What was the end result for Naaman?
He inherited his leprosy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not just too much of his
whole thing. His whole thing.
Who's the
destructive nature of money. Okay, well, how about a New Testament example? What about a couple named Ananias and Sapphira? Remember their story? You know, they saw, you know, what others were doing and giving their money, bringing it to the apostles, and, you know, money being used to help people and so forth, and people were all just glad about that and so forth, and so they went and sold a piece of land that they had and brought the money to the apostles, and what was their problem?
They didn't bring all of it, and they lied about it.
Okay. They didn't bring all of it. Did they have to bring all of it?
No.
No, they didn't have to.
But they pretended that they
Yeah.
Did.
You see, there's where the problem was. They came, and they brought a portion of it because they kept back some of it for themselves. Was it not theirs to keep for themselves? Absolutely. That Peter told them that, didn't it? Okay. But they came and represented themselves as giving all of it.
The problem is that they actually lied when they were asked.
Yeah.
Because
they were saying, no, I took some. Yeah. They said, yeah, they could have said, no, you know, this is, you know, we kept this much for ourselves and this much we want to give to the church. And that'd been no problem. You see? But they lied about it. And Peter said that not only did they lie, but who did they lie to? They lied to the Holy Spirit. You see? Lied to the Holy Spirit. What was their outcome? And that's first, and you know, as the guys are carrying his body out, his wife comes in, and same thing happens to her. She had a chance. You see? The destructiveness of wealth. Today, if you stop and consider, you know, the stars, celebrities, athletes, and so forth, and the wealth that they have, and look at the problems that are so often associated with all of the wealth that these people are getting. In fact, I read an article this morning on the news this morning. I read this article, and it said, just the headline was NFL record. I think it was talking mainly about the Redskins, but it said the whole NFL. So I clicked on the thing and opened it up, and the record that they had was no NFL players had been arrested in September. Including Redskin players. But if you think about it, what is that saying here? These guys are making all kinds of money, and that money gets them in trouble. So much so that it is noteworthy that none of them got arrested for anything for the whole month of September.
That's what
the Lord is putting. Yeah,
probably. The thing that they lack, and we see it just plain as day, even the world sees it, they lack it. And for us to give to God, and anything we do for God,
you've got to ask for His wisdom. You see, money does not bring the freedom that it promises us. Instead, it oftentimes brings bondage because money really is. And we would do well to keep that in mind. Whether we've got lots of it, whether we've got some of it, or whether we don't have much of it at all. Okay? All right. Baron, real quick, we're out of time.
Yeah, I know of two situations. Basketball player named Ben Baker made quite a bit of money during his career, and now he has none of it, and he wears a star. And it's another football player that's making well above what we all made, and he lives on $60,000
a year. I read that article too. Yeah.
So it can get you in trouble.
Yeah. But again, I think that fellow, and I can't remember his name, has some wisdom about him that he's going to look. I need to, it's got to last me a lifetime here, so I can't just go and live lavishly now and spend it all, and I won't have anything. So, yeah. All right. Either Ray will be back. I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. It's got to come from the heart. If it doesn't come from the heart, then you're not giving it cheerfully, and you're giving really aimlessly. Next week, either Ray will be here to continue with his lesson one, or Jerry will go with his class. All right, so that's what we're doing.
Well, yes, ma'am. Make sure the ladies know that there's a bag up front here with their name on.
Okay.
Even maybe the announcements.
Okay, we have a bunch of bag ladies. Bags for the ladies up front. Okay. All right. Yes.